Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another day here at the Damage Report. Not just any day, a Wednesday, big news Wednesdays. And well, first of all, we got JR. JR, how's it going?
What's going on?
It's good to have you here. This is not a big news Wednesday in that we have some massive political development yet, although breaking news could happen. But we do have, and maybe I'm hyping it too much, one of, I think, the funniest videos that we'll have played on the show in quite a while. So I'm definitely excited for that. How have you been, JR?
I can't complain. I'm better than White House security that was bit by a dog. A dog that's living inside in the house, biting security. You know what? Maybe the American people should elect someone that respects our security personnel, that provides security so that you can walk through the day perfectly fine. And instead, you have your attack dog come and get him. This is an outrage.
See, that's my for Biden.
It's my audition.
So I read a headline to be on Fox News. I read a headline that was like, someone's trying to get Major killed. And we've now discovered it is J.R. Jackson. J.R. Jackson trying to kill that dog. Anyway, well, poor Major.
The thing is, they both got sent back to Delaware. Champ didn't do anything, but Champ's got to go back home. Prison. Isn't that messed up? He wasn't an accomplice in the crime. He's just his brother.
Anyway, that dang dog reflects poorly on Biden. Snake Anthony said, "No, it's just a dog. Like, he's in a new place. He's surrounded by tons of new people, so he bit." Honestly, most of the time when a dog bites a person, I'm gonna take the dog side, even without knowing the facts of the case, because I generally prefer their company. Anyway, thank you everybody for being here. Regardless of where you're at, this is a show where we generally talk about dogs. Sometimes Pop-Tarts, and we will give you various dog and Pop-Tart updates as we go through. But if you'd like to send us any super chats, comments, anything like that, we'll respond as we go. We got a lot that we're gonna go to. As Cenk would have once said, we got a lot of big ones, we got a lot of little ones. We even have JR sports news. We're gonna be talking about one of those sports boys.
Yeah.
And he done something wrong.
Man.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it more. You'll be shocked to find out I didn't know anything about this person or probably even the team, or the sport. So anyway, but with that, why don't we jump into this thing?
Let's do it.
Any day now, Joe Biden is going to sign the COVID aid bill, and then all of the good things that are in that bill will start to flow out. Not the good things that they took out, but that's a fight for another day. But survival checks will be going out once again. And notably, Biden is making a choice that's a little bit different in regards to them than Donald Trump did, and he's being criticized for it. But first, here is that decision.
Well, we are doing everything in our power to expedite the payments and not delay them, which is why the president's name will not appear on the memo line of this round of stimulus checks. The checks will be signed by a career official at the Bureau of Fiscal Service. This is not about him. This is about the American people getting relief, almost 160 million of them.
So he did not want his name to appear on the checks?
He didn't think that was a priority or a necessary step. His focus was on getting them out as quickly as possible.
Okay, so now look, we were obviously very critical of Trump for needlessly adding his name to it, but he did. And so now with Joe Biden not doing it, I'm not naming names, but JR, I've been on Twitter and I've seen a lot of people criticizing him for that choice. What do you think?
For not putting his name on it. I mean, I'm trying to figure out which people would criticize him over it, honestly.
Like people on the left I've seen are criticizing him.
Oh, okay, fine.
including people, that was surprising to me.
There's always someone that's going to be an opponent to him that's going to say it. So I don't know. Honestly, the way that many people got it was a direct deposit anyway, right? And you're not actually getting a check with someone's name written at the bottom of it, number one. So this whole ordeal of whether or not you put someone's name on a check, and even when Trump was doing it, I just don't understand, because then what does that make someone do later? I know what it's supposed to think. People are supposed to do later after they see your name at the bottom of a check. Oh, I'll vote for that guy again, because look, there's his name at the bottom. Not that I had no idea this guy was the president at the time that something got passed, and then I received this check, and now I'm supposed to connect the two when I couldn't connect it before because my brain just doesn't work. You have to understand who you think you're talking to, and if those people go through that full thought process to come to that conclusion, you probably didn't have to go through all this trouble to get them there, because they're gonna forget 2 days later if they had no idea that you were the president when we signed this thing into law, and then they got the checks. So that part. And number two, why do we care if Biden does it then? Even if he doesn't do it, I still don't care.
So let me, but you'll get a chance. But I would, what it seems like the argument that is being made is the Democrats, in this case Biden, have a chance to let people know that they delivered, and they're choosing not to. And so strategically, it's a bad idea. And you alluded to that, but yeah.
It comes from the fact that it happened while he's in office. Again, whoever does not know who's in office, and I'm sure there's plenty of Americans who have no idea who the president is, because that happens every cycle. You know, they'll do those back when Jay Leno was around. They do those, you know, jaywalking segments where they ask people very obvious questions and they have no idea what it is. That still exists. They'd be like, who's the vice president? And they'd go, Dan Quayle. So, you know, so it's always been the thing. So whoever those folks are, you're not gonna have this big voting bloc turn out larger in your reelection campaign because you put your name at the bottom of the checks at the very beginning of your term when everyone knew what was happening. So I don't know. It's so frustrating. If you keep treating Americans like they're dumb, which many of them are, I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like you don't want to get them to come out from any kind of clear thinking, but you keep thinking that they're supposed to go this route. I'm tired.
What about a compromise, JR? Compromise. No Joe Biden signature, Major Biden paw print.
Wait, okay. Major Biden, first off, bite mark. Let's keep it real.
Just tears part of the envelope off on every one of them. He's a menace. He needs to be stopped.
I feel like you're not critical of it, but it sounds like you think maybe he should have put his name on.
No, I don't. I don't actually. I do think the Democrats need to be way better at making sure that people know they're delivering for them. Yeah. But the part of that I think they need to be better at is not signatures. It's more delivering. Like, sure, a signature would be great. An executive order that cancels student loan debt would be better. Maybe we can go for that.
He can put his name on that.
Wait, would be better. And again, people know who the president is, or enough people know. They're already gonna give you credit. Like, and by the way, look, one thing I kind of like being consistent. I didn't like it when Trump did it, so I kind of feel like I shouldn't like it when Biden didn't. And also, I feel like this isn't noted enough. It's not Biden's money. Totally. It's not like Grandpa Biden's cutting a check for birthday. No, it's our money. It's weird enough that someone from the Treasury Department, my name should be on the check, and your name should be on the check. It's your money. But anyway, no, it's not his. And like, sure, he's the president that's signing it. Would any other Democrat veto it? Like, he is basically not in any way important to this process. Arguably, he helped them backtrack from their heavier like check commitment earlier. And he's been kind of negative in this entire process. So I don't even know how much credit he actually deserves over and above the Democrats.
Yeah, and by the way, if you want anyone to connect Democrats to this relief bill, Republicans are doing it consistently already anyway. They're just doing it with demonizing terms. Like, can you believe that? Well, first off, lying about half of it. What's included in this bill, which was included in previous bills when Trump was signing it? You know, the scare tactics, since they opposed it, 100% of Republicans opposed it in the Senate. Since they completely opposed it, they now need to come up with some kind of talking point to show how bad it was and how these Democrats, these evil Democrats, did all these horrible things to you in signing this piece of legislation. Yeah. So this is, they're connecting it to Biden anyway, because they're trying to find anything to stick to him, because the things that you probably should be opposing Biden on, they agree with him on.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, anyway, it's not the most important thing. I just felt we should talk about it because I've seen some disagreement, and it's not one of the things that necessarily like one group definitely believes this way. And vice versa.
I'm open to the conference. I'm just gonna be on record for that.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be. Featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So thanks to a lot of political nonsense and backtracking on promises and wasted opportunities, the minimum wage increase was not included in the COVID aid bill. But we should really, really hope that it's passed soon through whatever process they're gonna come up with, because apparently it would actually help a lot of people. Now that's not gonna be news to you, but we wanna continually reiterate to you how important it is. And in particular, we wanna make a connection to how it was stopped this last time around. So a new EPI report finds that the Raise the Wage Act of 2021, which phases, this is the standalone bill for it, which phases in a $15 minimum wage by 2025, would raise the earnings of 32 million workers, 21% of the workforce, which was news to me because I thought it was like six kids that work at McDonald's while they're sophomores at high school. Apparently it's not that. Apparently it's a quarter of the entire workforce. But anyway, here's what's even more spicy. The report also shows how many workers would benefit in each state and congressional district, revealing that 24 million workers, 75% of those who would have received a raise, are in states represented by the 58 senators who voted against including the minimum wage in the American Rescue Plan last week. So it's not just that they're like evenly distributed and being like, you know, betrayed by those they voted for. They're more likely to have been betrayed if they're on the minimum wage. And maybe, I mean, I can't say for sure, maybe the fact that these are states that have more people on the minimum wage has led to politicians that are gonna be more defensive towards businesses that don't wanna pay them a living wage.
Yeah,
Jared, what do you think?
So anytime, these are those simple types of stats and figures and realities that you can actually push to people. And doesn't have to be campaign season. You know, I think this is one of the things that I think people, politicians, maybe the handlers do it, and maybe I'm wrong about it. Maybe they are campaigning this whole time and they're just doing it the wrong way. But you don't have to be literally in campaign season to make a point about how your opponent in real time is screwing over the American people. And it's not just for the sake of campaigning, it's for the sake because you want to help the American people. So when I was mentioning earlier how Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton and those guys are completely lying about the things that are in relief packages and how it's screwing over the American people. They're doing that in real time. You can point out in real time the reality. Look, the people who are affected by the people who voted against this help, who voted against the minimum wage. So we want to keep talking about how Americans don't want minimum wage. Conservative Senator Joe Manchin likes to say, hey, my people don't need any kind of raise. They don't care. They want to live in poverty. They enjoy dirt, dust, and nothingness. That's what West Virginia is about. You know, so point out that, hey, this is the way it's always been. Politicians like to speak for the American people when they've not spoken to the American people. But then they're told this is what the American people want. Which American people told you that? You know, your consultants, you know, the people who gave you all the money so you can run, those are the American people you spoke to. So anyway, in real time, point out the fact that look, 75% of the folks who are getting rejected, this kind of normalcy in their lives, come from the states, from the senators represent that will not accept this. What are you gonna do about it? Every time this happens, there's no accountability for politicians. Point out in real time, don't wait until we have a midterm election. Now you're gonna be, remember 2 years ago when he voted against this? No, tell them right now when they're thinking about it. People don't forget this type of stuff, especially if you say it over and over and over and over again. We've been talking about this minimum wage stuff for weeks. Keep talking about it. Point out that fact instead of how there's consistent conversations that like to disparage folks that want the minimum wage hike. As if that's a negative thing or if that's an unpopular thing. The majority of the American people want this. Keep talking about it.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about one of those people you were alluding to there in just a bit. Just a few more facts to arm you for conversations about the minimum wage going forward. Let's see, it would raise the wages of at least 19 million essential and frontline workers. 60% of all workers who would see a pay increase are part of that. Increased pay for nearly 1 in 3 black workers and 1 in 4 Hispanic workers, compared with about 1 in 5 white workers. Hey, what do you know? The Republicans aren't that interested in it. I wonder why. Lift out of poverty up to 3.7 million people, including an estimated 1.3 million children. Hashtag save the children. Not if it costs money. I mean, Absolutely. Come on. I'll post online. I ain't paying. So look, I do want to focus on one individual though. So let's jump into that. Kristen Sinema was but one of those senators who voted to stop the minimum wage from being raised, but she did choose, and it was very much a conscious choice, to sort of burn herself into our memories of that, thanks to this performance. Hope that people don't forget about that in the next 4 years when she runs for re-election. And by the way, search for Abilina Sabrina, who's been on the show previously. She has an amazing parody video of that on her YouTube channel. But anyway, look, that wasn't just a betrayal of what Kristen Sinema has said before about the minimum wage. She has pretended while campaigning that she supports raising it. Also, the reason that she's giving for some of her recent decisions is as out of step with her constituents as the actual need for the minimum wages. She has many people in her state that could desperately use that raise in wages. But in addition, she says that, like, oh God, there's lots of stuff that I would love to do in theory, but there's these traditions and there's this filibuster and there's all this stuff that just means we can't do the stuff that I promised. Oops, now we can't do it. The interesting thing is, in a February Data for Progress survey, 61% of likely voters in Arizona specifically said they favor approving key bills, compared to 26% who think it's more important to preserve traditional Senate procedures and rules like the filibuster. I would say preserve our modern day misconceptions of Senate procedures and like a context-free version of the filibuster that pretends it's not what it actually is. But anyway, and the response did notably differ across party lines. And this is what's most amazing. 76% of Democrats thought approving major legislation was more important, as did 66% of independents, while just 42% of Republicans did. But honestly, that doesn't even mean anything. Like, she's a Democrat, and so they value the filibuster more. If it was a Republican and they were in control, I think their views might change. But almost all of her constituents would, of course, rather she actually passed legislation. They don't support her on this, just as they don't support her on stopping the minimum wage specifically from being raised. And the question going forward, Jer, is going to be, is this gonna hurt her? Is her approval rating gonna tank? Is she gonna generate a primary opponent for herself? Because she is so fundamentally out of step with her constituents.
Well, it may generate a primary opponent. And this is the thing that I think Democrats can foresee. They're like, okay, we have enough of a handle on these wily progressives that are trying to infiltrate our party and take over and actually do something for American people. We have establishment side of our party fighting against them, and we have the entirety of the Republican Party fighting against them. It's like 3/4 of politicians fighting against 25% of the rest, you know? So it's like they feel like they have this conglomerate of folks that can push back enough that they don't have to worry about a primaries enough. And they know they're not gonna get any pushback from Republicans on what Sinema did, because they agree with her. So it would open up the door if Republicans started saying, look at what Kristen Sinema did on the Senate floor, thumbs down, purse in hand, performative. If they do all that, it opens the door very much so for people to say, didn't you vote with her? You know, so they can't push that because they don't want the minimum wage increase in there as well. So I think many established Democrats realize that, and they're like, well, all we have to worry about is a couple of progressive challenges here and there, and we've already we've galvanized support against them enough. But I think maybe they have they're probably misreading their chances in doing that so much. I mean, because I think the progressive movement is building enough that they'll have people that can challenge them. This can be used, and that's what they're trying to push back on. I'm not sure if they can contain it much more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, and she's a reminder going forward that the way someone campaigns can, in theory, tell you who they'll be as a politician, but it won't necessarily. She presented herself as not just a progressive, but like as a radical, like going back decades, she has been doing that. And so people supported her, and now she's in office, and oh, she's not. So we can change our valuation and we can stop supporting her. And in fact, we can find someone who is actually going to do what they say and we can get rid of her. That is the only rational stance. You get in all these people who run as progressives and then you watch them. And if they don't make good on their promises, you get rid of them. That's rational. Evaluate and challenge them if it's merited. There's sort of like a fake version of it where you pretend that's what you're doing, but you're really doing it because they won't come on your show. And to demonstrate the difference between those two things, AOC still rocks policy wise, but won't come on my show. Hey, what do you know? Still support her. So it's not that difficult in practice, actually. Anyway, it's a lot of work because there's a good number of them and there's a lot of votes. We have to take a lot of information, but Kristen Sinema has made our job a little bit easier because in addition to voting against the minimum wage, she also did it in a way that is so fundamentally insulting that I don't think people are gonna forget anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the reasons for her motivations for doing it that way. Because again, as many people maybe know by now, I watch C-SPAN like it's SportsCenter. So there was like 18 hours worth of coverage of just a Senate hearing because I had to find that moment. And I went through many of it, you know, every 30 seconds or so, they read out someone's name that voted. I didn't see any of these senators. I saw a few of them milling around, but I didn't see, I don't know, Ted Cruz roll up and go.
Yeah.
He didn't have to. They just went, Senator Cruz, no. And you didn't see him, you know? So yeah. this was purposeful. This was a way to do something to point it out. And also, as we pointed out yesterday on the main show, TYT, she before she got to that point, she tried to nudge Mitch McConnell and say, hey, look what I'm about to do. Yep. Now, that's speculation about what she said to him. She could have said, good morning, how was the orange juice? I saw you in the cafe, you know? But we don't know. We do know she wanted his attention just before she did that. Which he didn't give her any of because it's still Mitch McConnell. He's like, yeah, thank you for I use you and I ignore you afterwards. Yeah, that's the conversation that just gets had. And you know, I wish someone would ask her. I'm not sure if she's not taking any interviews. So what was the plan there? Why did you do it that way? Because she did it for a reason.
I don't know
why. She wants attention. Give it to her.
I don't know. Anyway. Hopefully in 4 years, many people will go into the ballot and give her a meh.
Record number of migrant children are in Border Patrol custody and shelter beds are scarce, raising fears of a new crisis at the border.
And a crisis it indeed is. More than 3,200 unaccompanied migrant children are now being housed in Customs and Border Protection holding facilities. Two different sources have confirmed. The New York Times, citing internal CBP documents, first reported that the number of detained children had tripled in the last 2 weeks, which is, I mean, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I don't think anyone predicted that as bad as it already was, that it would get so much worse so fast. Nearly half of the children, 1,400, have been held beyond the 3-day legal limit. CBP holding cells, sometimes known as hieleras, I assume that's Spanish, I apologize for my mispronunciation, which I'm assuming I butchered, are not designed for children. Oh God, they're typically small concrete rooms with concrete or metal benches and no beds. So yeah, about as bad as you might imagine the conditions actually are. And here was our fear that we talked about a couple of weeks ago when one of those facilities was reopened, one of the tent facilities that had initially started under the Trump administration, would be that, hey, Trump's gone. And Biden doesn't seem like he, for some reason, weirdly hates brown kids. So it's probably fine, right, JR?
Absolutely.
And yet, look, in a couple of weeks, it's already gotten much worse.
And that could be strictly based off of the numbers, right? You're talking about the numbers, how much more they've increased over time. Yes. And then the ability to put this to put all this together. And again, you referenced the fact that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago and how the housing facilities are still the same and they're working on it. And my point then was show us evidence of you progressing on this because maybe you were in a bad spot to start from because we know who you were handed the keys from, who handed you the keys to the administration and the things they were doing before that. So just show us that you're working towards this as quickly as possible because these are humans. Let's not forget that part. So if there's a problem with how long people are in holding cells or children are in inhumane conditions or adults are in inhumane conditions, Show us that you're doing something about that if you care. If you're not showing us that, then it kind of sounds like you're kind of trying to sweep this under the rug and keep things moving, or maybe make it incrementally better. It's only gonna be like 25% better. You know, at least they have this kind of bed rather than that kind of hard bed, so it's a kind of semi-hard bed. It does. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that there's still people that are reporting on this. Some about the way this could be going, because we need to see proof of this change. And maybe they're expecting everyone that voted for them to just say, oh yeah, sure, it's Biden. Everything's gonna be great without actually paying attention anymore.
Yeah, and like we said the first time, I do believe that in general terms, I don't think that Biden is gonna institute a policy the intent of which is to cause so much human suffering that people thousands of miles away will be so terrified that they'll stay in a place where they could be murdered at any moment rather than come here. But that doesn't mean that a ton of human suffering won't result or isn't already happening now. Especially when, and I feel it's important to remind people of this, it isn't going to be Joe Biden who's in these rooms dealing with these kids. It's gonna be ICE and CBP people who have done horrible things over the past few years. And sure, the president's different, but those individuals who are gonna be putting all of the policies into practice are just as predisposed to harassment, physical abuse, sexual abuse, literal cases of rape. Those sorts of things happen, not because Trump himself went to the border and did it, but because you have a sick system with a ton of sick people in it. That system's still there. Those people are still there. And so when I hear things like this video we're about to show you, I get a little bit worried. So what are the conditions actually like? Well, we have some general details, but we don't have a ton of like on the ground footage because as of right now, we can't yet. So that seems like a problem. And here is the press secretary addressing those concerns.
Why so few details on this release? This doesn't seem to be in the transparency of in the spirit of transparency that Secretary Mayorkas promised here at this platform. There were no cameras, there were no press. Julissa answered very few details about what they saw on that visit.
Well, first, the president, she conveyed, asked them to go because he really wanted to get a full assessment from senior members of his policy team about what they were seeing on the ground based on meetings, based on conversations with officials from HHS, officials who were running these facilities about what their challenges are, what improvements could be made. And as she noted, they also spoke with children. They'll have, as is a normal part of any internal policy process, they'll have a briefing with him in the coming days. We do look forward to, he's committed to, we are all committed to allowing cameras into these facilities, but we want to figure out the best way to do that, protecting the privacy of the kids in a way that's secure and safe. And certainly that's something we look to do in the future.
So look, do the privacy rights of the kids matter? Of course they do. Is it sort of a convenient way to buy yourself a couple of weeks? Seems like it. And you know, when any government politician's like, oh no, I would like totally love for you to be able to see what's going on there, but like, there's something else that you should be more worried about. We'll get back to it at some point. Like we always say, Biden's not in fact my grandfather. She is not my aunt. I'm not predisposed to believe them. Like they're still government officials. And so when it's the welfare of kids that's at risk, I'm not interested in their little evasions or their little delays. I wanna know what's going on and I wanna know that it's probably pretty horrible. And that would then put pressure on them to make it better as quickly as possible. I'm sure they will say, what could we do? Lots of kids started coming across. And apparently, according to the numbers, that is true. The numbers have spiked. But you're supposed to be better than Stephen Miller and Trump. You have the entire apparatus of the US government. You can figure something out other than tents. I could have figured out tents. You could figure out something better. Get Pete Buttigieg. I hear he's awesome. Maybe he can come up with something.
Well, he's in administration now. So maybe I'm a bad politician. Maybe I'm a bad political advisor. Maybe that's why I don't have these types of jobs. But I think it's pretty easy to, if people want to see the insides of these places and they're horrible, I know it could look bad politically, but you just got into office. So you can admit even before cameras come in, yeah, the situations are horrible at these facilities. We're working to fix that. It can't be an overnight solution if that's what's happening. But you can't say that if you're not doing that, because people will circle back and say, okay, it's been 3 months now, what's going on in these facilities? And if it's still the same, now we have a problem that you're just not doing anything about. So if it's a problem now, it's easy to say, hey, there's a problem, we're gonna change this. Look at how horrible it is. It's okay. Yes, you got elected and you're in office and you can say things are bad. This is one of those politician lines that as soon as you're in office, as soon as you have any kind of support, you have to act like everything is just great. Well, why did you run then? If everything is great after 2 months, everything can't be great after 2 months. Just pitch a little bit of reality instead of this whole "I'm Superman, politician man. I'm in office now. Everything is great." Hey, it kind of works because regular citizens believe that for some reason. Somebody crosses into the White House doors and then suddenly everything changes. No, they have to do something to change this stuff. So then make them do it, watch them do it, monitor their progress, and report back. But you know. Who knows if that'll happen, because we just buy into people saying, well, someone else is in office, everything must be great now.
Exactly, that's my fear. And this is one of the most obvious examples, but in others perhaps as well. Yesterday, the media world suffered a number of losses. And no, I am not talking about Piers Morgan quitting his TV program. That got talked about quite a lot. He apparently, God, look at this. Can we put up the screenshot so you can see this picture that they went with for his face? Oops, I did it. Anyway, he said a bunch of terrible things. And so he got some pushback. So he stormed off the show and then quit. And all of this was totally authentic and organic. It was just a person doing honest stuff. No, he has another job lined up. And so he did this to then claim that he was canceled or whatever. That is literally the only move that anyone has. You do this, you claim that you were canceled when you voluntarily quit so that you can go work for the new version of Fox News that they're gonna have in the UK, or to start a Substack. That's literally the only move that anyone in media has these days. But anyway, what I'm actually talking about got far less attention, and that was that the news website BuzzFeed laid off 47 HuffPost workers in the US, the majority of them journalists, and closed down HuffPost's Canadian operation, reportedly without warning to staff, less than a month after purchasing the rival company. These cuts amount to 30% of HuffPost's US-based journalists at a time when most news outlets across the country are shrinking or facing closure. This received an obviously negative reaction from the HuffPost union, which said, "We never got a fair shot to prove our worth." And in fact, the Canadian division, according to what I had read, had unionized 2 weeks ago. Now, apparently they were planning on doing a bunch of firing. So it seems a little bit less clearly we're firing to kill the union, but they did still do that. Now, bear in mind, BuzzFeed also slashed its own news division back in 2019, firing 43 journalists at that point. And what makes it maybe even a little bit more insulting, again, like with Kristen Sinema, the insult is the substance. The way it was done, though, can still be a little bit worse. According to journalist Laura Bassett, HuffPost employees, after a year of working through a pandemic that isn't over, were invited to a meeting today with the password "Spring is here," where they were told 47 of them would be laid off. They would only know if they still had a job if they didn't receive an email by one. Ugh. Which every part of that is the worst way that you could do this. Spring is here, ice cream and puppies. And oh, by the way, Bunchy got fired. Wait, you wanna know which ones? Oh, you'll figure it out eventually. Just frantically hit refresh on your mail for the next 4 hours to find out. That is so insulting, JR. In addition to the fact that there's a lot of people losing their jobs.
It takes so much energy and effort. And we don't know the behind the scenes reasons why they went with this approach, but the way it looks is pretty bad. It looks like it took some time to figure out a nice game show way of telling people how they're gonna lose their jobs. Some of them are gonna lose their jobs. It's like, you know, who wants to, what's the show with where there's something behind door number one? It's like reveal show. It's like just dig into the grab bag, see if your name doesn't come out. If it doesn't come out, you still have a job. Like it takes effort and it takes a process to make sure people don't, unless they're still deciding, for people to really know whether or not you made the decision to fire them or not, or to lay them off, whatever it is you're calling it. So again, I feel like things could be so much simpler if you just take a normal approach, like you're talking to humans that have lives and money situations they have to deal with. At least talk to them in a way that it's not like, okay, you guys, spring is here. That sounds nice and positive. Sign into the meeting so you can find out some devastating news for some of you. Now go home and just drink
and not even stress. Know then. to not even know then. And it's still in a pandemic that they've been working under incredibly difficult situations. By the way, with HuffPost Canada, they had a different terrible way of finding out. Before they were told, the website said this: it's no longer publishing content. They hadn't known yet at that point, and then all of a sudden the site's down. It's just awful. Like, losing your job is the terrible thing, but worrying about how it's going to be done. I remember, this is so ridiculous, but I remember, so I'm like the only person early in the day that's ever at the studio now. And one day I got here and I used my key fob and it didn't let me in. And for a brief second, I was like, oh no. Is this how they tell me I can't get into the building? It turned out it wasn't that, thankfully. But anyway, and look,
we in reality
disagree, but there's people in the chat that are saying this is BuzzFeed and HuffPost, they're not real journalists. We will have to disagree, agree to disagree. Yes. Do both of those sites do fluffy stuff as well? Yes. These are journalists. They work on politics and news and the economy and business and tech and all those things. A lot of these are very good, serious journalists who now have lost their jobs. If we could show a little bit of empathy, that would be consistent with our ideology. Thank you.
Well, I mean, just even in general, I mean, every site, I don't read or love every aspect of it, but I mean, I don't think that means they should not have a job. I'm sure someone reads and watches some of the things and enjoys it. Even, you know, if I don't, it's not like I want people to not have a job because I disagree with the way that they write or what they write about necessarily. Now, if someone's damaging Americans with like false information and leading people down the roads of things like insurrection, when some of these sites talk about things that don't exist and threats that really aren't there, yeah, those I have issues with because it's affecting everyone negatively and potentially fatally, which we saw on that particular day. So things like that, sure, yeah, there can be, you can be against journalists that are doing horrible things, but unless they're doing that type of stuff, I mean, I just kind of don't pay attention to them.
Exactly. And like, look, we started the segment with like the joke about Piers Morgan, but like both of those things did happen yesterday. Which did you hear more about?
Right.
Really? You heard more about Piers Morgan, who quit. He just left. And that's the biggest media news. And this is not the first time. Other people have voluntarily left the place they work at to go make $500,000, $1 million a year on Patreon or Substack or whatever. And they have presented that as the most amazing cancellations in all of media. While when nobody's talking about it, dozens of people lose their jobs from HuffPost, dozens lose their jobs from BuzzFeed, entire media outlets shut down, actual journalists who are not millionaires losing their jobs. And all of this is happening and it's resulting in more and more of the media, the share of the media pie being these right-wing outlets that are supported by millionaires and billionaires like the Daily Wire and all of those. Those are always going to be okay. They will unfortunately never actually hire journalists, but they'll exist. And then meanwhile, the alternatives to it are not supported by billionaires. And it's very difficult, especially during a pandemic. So all of this is going on. I understand some stories are really exciting and even sometimes we get caught up in them. But this is a trend that is happening and it is a tragedy for every one of those individuals and as a sum result for the country.
We wonder when it's when it's gonna turn around. But this is the type of stuff that like established, you know, cable television media, I think, maybe. You know, there's a competition thing. You know, if you're losing people who potentially have different outlets or different avenues for delivering news, you know, it's good to lose a little bit of competition from things like this.
Yeah. By the way, so this is like JR had been around one time, something like this was going around, but someone suggests make a progressives or sexy network called Only Turks. We're not doing OnlyFans. Like, yes, worried too. That's not the solution.
Hey, there was one viewer that said she was going to help me with mine, and I haven't gotten that consultation yet. Maybe it's because I haven't paid the fees yet that she's requiring. But I mean, it's time to get this project off the ground.
Around the country, Republicans are successfully cutting back on voting rights in states like Iowa and Georgia, as we've covered. Meanwhile, in Congress, they've passed HR1, a bill designed exclusively to make it easier for people to vote. Now, hopefully the Republicans will be good negotiating partners in this and be reasonable. No, no, they're not. Here's Mike Lee. Here's how he has presented that piece of legislation.
Everything about this bill is rotten to the core. This is a bill as if written in hell by the devil himself. This takes all sorts of decisions that the federal government really has no business making.
Yes, because his concern is federalism. That's his big concern. When the federal government does it instead of the states, it's not that he doesn't want voting, but that is enough to make it as if Asmodeus, the skull crusher himself, has drafted it. Seems a bit hyperbolic, JR.
Well, that's all they need. Again, this is pointed out many times. You know, how many people know everything that's in a bill? Not many. Many people who vote on the bills don't know what's in bills. So all you have to do is go on TV and then say that Satan wrote a bill. And then you have a certain percentage of people that go, that's right, Satan grabbed a pitchfork and signed that bill himself. You know, I don't know. I wonder if that really sticks in people's minds. Because if I'm watching a TV and I see AOC, who I support, say something like that, oh, the devil himself wrote this bill, I'd be like, okay, just, I think we can get to the problems with the bill without you saying ridiculous things. Yeah. Alexandria. So anyway, but it works on some people. I don't really understand how that's a tool that gets people on your side. It just doesn't work for me. So maybe I'm just a weird person. But how about what's in it? How about what it does? How about what you're against? Instead, Beelzebub wrote the bill. And did you know that then who's the Cain and Abel? Who's the bad guy? Cain.
I'm not really the Bible then guy.
Cain came out and took the same knife and stabbed the bill just like he did his brother. Like, who cares? Who cares? Just what problem do you have with it? The problem you have with it is that it'll give people access to voting. What you don't want is people to have access to voting, because somehow you're against democracy in America, even though you tout it so much. Again, America's the greatest democracy in the world. America's the greatest democracy in the world. America's that shining example on the hill. Greatest democracy. What is this, democracy? And you're against the same thing you keep promoting every time you want to pump up how great America is, but you're against those things that you say make America great. Which one is it, bro?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Well, just Beelzebub wrote it, and then you don't have to have any explanation for your flawed logic.
Oh, totally. And also, it's very efficient because you are broadcasting to a group of people that includes the deranged. And what would you do if you thought someone was in league with Satan in passing legislation? Would you just try to get him in the next election? Or would you potentially be predisposed to violence? Stay tuned and find out in the next season of American Democracy. Oh, and by the way, there are literally millions of Americans that believe that Nancy Pelosi is and Hillary Clinton are drinking baby blood with Satan. So when you just throw around that they're in league with Satan, it's also a sop to the Q people. That's what it is. You're referencing Satan because they believe it's Donald Trump versus Satan, rather than them two playing like, you know, 18 holes together. And by the way, in terms of the logic that JR was talking about, how out of touch what the bill does is what they're saying. Even in that segment, it's pretty out of touch. So he's talking about Satan and all that. I looked at the actual graphic. Here's the actual graphic that was next to him. Implements mandatory automatic voter registration. Allows voters to substitute photo ID with a sworn written statement. Dear God, expands mail-in voting in this economy. Now restores voting rights for convicted felons. Probably does make them piss their pants, their pleated pants. Encourages statehood for Washington, D.C. Oh my God, it's Beelzebub. He's behind this. That's another one of those Fox things where they just put a graphic up where I'm like, yes, more please. How is that objectively scary?
Because they've convinced people long enough that all these things are the worst things ever, with absolutely no explanation as to why. You don't need the why. You just need to say they're trying to do this to you. The fact that we've allowed ourselves to come into this nature of, hey, that side's trying to get you. And then many Republicans have been convinced of that without thinking about it. Yes, Democrats, libs, progressives are all against what Republicans do. But then after you say, hey, you know what those Republicans are doing? There's usually a sentence or two afterwards saying what those Republicans are actually doing that you're against. So you can be against someone's ideology if you talk about it. But instead you go, do you know Democrats are trying to pass a bill?
Yeah.
And then that's your argument. That's it. As long as they're trying to do something, be against it. That's all it is. There's no explanation behind it. Just a bad guy wrote it. I don't like him, so don't like him either. That's the political discussion we're having now that people can't follow.
Eddie O'Donnell says they're threatening us with a good time. Exactly, exactly.
Jesus.
Craig is saying in the tune of Jesus take the wheel, Satan take the bill. Oh God, we live in crazy times.
So the next question to Mike Lee should then be, so if fewer people, why do you want fewer people to vote? Because it really is the objective. Why do you want fewer people to vote? Why do you want fewer people to vote? Not
you know what they'd say. Because it's fraudulent.
No, no.
As we said, fewer people to vote. You can't let people vote at 8:30. They'll commit the frauds. You have to cut it off at 8.
Yeah, and then and make them go with the reason why they call them gotcha questions is because it gets journalists potentially to not ask them very normal follow up questions like, so can you give me some instances of how this potential voting problem has upended American democracy and how everything is fraudulent? Can you tell me that? Because there have been studies about how it none of these things actually do any of those things. So there is proof on one side, and then there's Satan on the other. These are the discussions we're having. So until you make the people that are talking about Satan signing bills give proof of their argument, don't listen to them. Let them go on Fox News and spot it. But I guess that's good enough for them.
Yeah. I don't know why he's worried, man. Satan can write all the bills he wants until they get rid of the filibusters ever to pass. So in talking about the Meghan Markle interview on The View, Meghan McCain wanted to make a strong point against the monarchy, but it was undercut a little bit in a hilarious fashion. Take a look.
The American experiment is the way to go. And if we have two American women, Meghan Markle and Oprah Winfrey, who are single-handedly finishing what George Washington and our revolutionary counterparts did, I'm all for it.
Okay.
That's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I'm sorry, it's so messed up. Like I think, yeah, her point was like stupid and bombastic or whatever. Like they're not ending the monarchy, shut up. But she ended like so proud of herself, and then okay, why would you do that to your co-host?
The thing is, if you don't know yet, I mean, I get it if it's her first week on the show, and she's like, mm-hmm. I don't know who this Whoopi Goldberg lady is. I don't know who Joy Behar is. I don't know that they're good at making me look bad. Or she kind of sets herself up. It's kind of like, you know, it's a softball. You can smash it. So how do you, like, you can't keep setting yourself up for these things. It's like maybe she didn't get ribbed enough in school. Because, you know, you always have your little group of friends and you give each other trouble and you snap on each other and it's just fun. But eventually you got to start figuring a way to not set yourself up. Maybe that was just me growing up. You know, I got trash talking family and friends to the point where you're like, oh, I can't set myself up for this one. She's not, she doesn't have the mindset to not set herself up. It's just too easy. It's like, okay, so you're trying to make a point, but you're surrounded by folks who are ready to just knock it down. At least at least try to make it harder on them. This is way too easy.
That's true. It was. And so that's why like I don't have 100% sympathy for her. But I do have just a little bit because I feel like that reaction was so hilariously dismissive that I feel like you could put that after anything and it would make the person look bad. Like if you took out like Bill Pullman's inspirational speech in Independence Day and like Jens Strong, and then she's like, okay, he'd probably be like, you're right, let's not do it. I really should have edited something. Hey, there's gotta be some people who can do some editing. Tweet me some memes, that Whoopi thing. It doesn't matter what mic drop moment you have, Whoopi would have shut that down.
Yeah, it's sad. And but you know what? And it sounds like this, I don't know how long it's been happening. I don't watch The View regularly, but it seems like more and more on air, they're willing to kind of make her look really bad with their responses to what she says. And which tells me, which we've heard about before, sometimes the behind the scenes stuff could be reaching such a point that they're like, we can't take working with this person anymore, but there's no way this is all gonna get broken up. So let's just have it out on the air because we're frustrated. I don't know. I don't know, but it seems like it's reaching a pretty bad point to the point where, you know, something's got to change.
Yeah, yeah, and there's more behind the scene, like some insiders were I don't care about that so much. Like, they're gonna have a conservative, and by the way, they're gonna have more than one conservative, because even like out of this interaction, I prefer Whoopi, but Whoopi has attacked progressives like a ton herself.
Yeah,
but I mean, anyway,
was it Abby Huntsman who used to be on there? Because she was like moderate conservative, so she was easily get along. And I think part of Meghan McCain showing up is what ran her off too. I don't know, but I think that's what was rumored. Again, these are rumors. So, you know, just there's supposed to be this level of an ease in morning shows, and this is uncomfortable. And every time they talk.
Now imagine if I took that thing of JR ending right there with a perfectly good point, and then put Whoopi after it. He'd look bad. Okay, we're gonna test that, by the way.
Anyway.
We have basically no time, but I want to really fast get to this because I feel like JR comes every week hoping for sports news. And so we're going to have that. And by the way, I see in Twitch that they've modified the Sprocket emote to have a bandana wrapped around his head, and it is adorable. It is adorable. Anyway, with that, let's jump into our last topic of the show. A player for the Miami Heat is in hot water. In fact, banned from the team as a result of something he said during a Twitch stream. Here is a little bit from that stream.
Let's go, baby.
Cowards don't like me.
Okay, so that's not really decipherable as human speech once you bleep it out. But in addition to just the swears that were bleeped out, there was also an anti-Semitic slur that was used very aggressively and confidently by Myers Leonard. JR, had you been familiar with this happening and the reaction from the team?
No, I hadn't seen that this had happened, because you know, this is more of a Twitch stream. What was it? I don't know which games that these guys are playing.
I think it was Call of Duty.
Yeah. You know, and if there's some kind of promotional thing for Myers Leonard to show himself to the fans as this normal guy who plays video games, I don't know. But it's I guess you get a glimpse into what maybe many athletes would just kind of say flippantly, because you know, let me find a way to insult someone with some feisty cuss words, and I didn't work out for him. So yeah, Myers Leonard, I don't think has a lot of, he doesn't get tons of like press for anything else, so this is probably a pretty bad thing for him to now be known for, other than just, you know, a big man for the Heat. And generally seemed like a likable guy, which is probably why he did this in the first place. So it's, I think maybe more organizations are going to rethink whether or not they're going to put guys in front of the camera to just go off the cuff.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that a lot of these players are very young. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they might say stuff like that, trying to be cool or intimidating or whatever, like, especially if you don't have a lot of experience controlling what you say online. Anyway, Leonard issued an apology yesterday, claimed that he didn't know what the slur meant when he said it. I am, quote, "I am deeply sorry for using an anti-Semitic slur during a live stream yesterday. While I didn't know what the word meant at the time, my ignorance about its history and how offensive it is to the Jewish community is absolutely not an excuse, and I was just wrong." So look, I'm not gonna say what the slur was, but it seems like everyone should know that it's an anti-Semitic slur. JR, do you think that there is a chance that a young player like this might have heard it and didn't actually know what it meant, what the context was?
That's always possible. But again, like he said, it's not an excuse, so which is why you shouldn't even have said that part. Because I don't think there's anything that's within people's approach to whether or not they're gonna get beyond this, or whether or not, if you said, "Hey, so I said this word, I've said it before. I've used it somewhat regularly, and no one ever told me any different about it. So I mean, I was comfortable, and I need to rethink the way where I come from and the things that I say, because it's actually pretty ignorant to just say things that I don't know what they mean. Instead of, you know what, I didn't know what it meant, but it's no excuse," which is fine to a degree, because now it leaves us to then speculate: is this an excuse that he didn't know, or did he really know and now he's trying to get off the hook? Because in my opinion, it doesn't get him off the hook, so it's a pretty bad excuse, which leads me to believe that he didn't know, because it's not like it's a game-winning type of excuse. "Oh, I didn't know." That doesn't make it any better. So I'm prone to believe him, because honestly, it's not like it got him off the hook or anything.
I might question whether a person would not actually know that it was anti-Semitic. And as someone termed it on YouTube, it is the slur rhyming with bike, basically. That's as close as I'm gonna come to saying it. But anyway, I don't, in terms of the form of the apology, like he is trying to explain it. Like if he actually didn't know what it meant, then you would very much want people to know that you didn't. Even though, as he says, it's not an excuse. He says he was still wrong. If he had said, I didn't know what it meant, get off my case, that's terrible. If he says, I didn't know what it meant, but it's still terrible, then I think that that's okay. Although we can still question whether it actually makes sense for him to say that he doesn't know it.
Yeah, and then I also wonders, because these are the normal processes you go through whenever something like this happens, especially when it's an organization like this and it's a well-known player or people with money. You go through the apology, which they've done. Then the next thing is maybe given to some charities that are trying to work towards knowledge or spread of knowledge about what's the plight of Jewish folks and anti-Semitism that thrives to this day. And how to eradicate it. All those things, if you start giving to those things, fine, cool. But that's not gonna eliminate the problem. Because what you said, and apparently where your approach is on this, is the problem. So giving to these organizations, which may be the next step, sure. But it just becomes a PR situation where then our publicists have to take over and try and remedy our image. And then that's when it starts looking a little fake to me. Just, it's kind of like, say what you're gonna say, let us know where you're coming from, and then kind of eek back into the shadows, because more talking about this and more trying to make yourself look better, actually, I think would make you look worse. But again, yeah, I'm a different type of person. Maybe those things do help people remedy people's images, and I'm just wrong.
I mean, I guess. I mean, the people, they're paid a lot of money to do this stuff. Anyway, as of right now, he's banned from the team. He is banned from Twitch. We'll see if either or both of those last, how people interpret his apology, but that's basically what happened. And
yeah, you know what?
Be careful in the future when you're putting people on Twitch.
Basically, yeah, Chris Nebbit in the chat right now said, "What do you think that it meant?" That's such a good question. Hey, if you didn't know what it meant, you're saying words you're very comfortable with. What did you think it meant?
Yeah. Well, JR, thank you so much for joining us for this sports hour on TDR. Always glad to cover the fields and the courts with you. But anyway, no, it's always good to have you here. Thank you as always.
Good times, John. We'll be back with big news on Wednesday. I feel like we kind of went through moderate news today. Next Wednesday,
moderate news.
Big news. And also, last week of March, I'm not here on this Wednesday. I might as well tell you that now, John. John has no idea what's going on. I'm gonna tell him now. You're gonna be doing the show by yourself on the last week of March, which leads into April.
What, you can leave, but you can't tell me I can't. Yes.
John, let's keep it real.
Yeah.
I've already branded hashtag JR Wednesdays. It cannot be. God.
Imagine we do a full show and it's still his camera's on. He's not there, but we have the shot. Anyway, thank you, JR. Now go away. With Donald Trump now out of office, does that mean that threats to Americans' reproductive rights are not something that you need to worry about? Perhaps not actually the case. And joining us now to discuss is the co-creator of The Daily Show and AAF's founder, Liz Winstead. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, hardly excited.
Yeah, so we were sort of alluding to some of that before we started this video. So we do have a new president. How much does that actually matter in this area of policy?
You know, it matters on some levels, especially when you look at who the health and human services person that the president will put in place. You know, that means that we can be looking at repealing the Hyde Amendment, which is an amendment that since 1974 has been added to budgets that says we won't have any federal funding for abortion, which all that does is harm poor people, people of color, and why shouldn't everybody who needs access to care be able to have that within their Medicaid, you know, or Medicare? So we feel like that is just an oppressive law that is solely created for that. Also, things like Title X funding, which is the funding for the poorest of the poor to be able to get pap smears, to be able to get reproductive health education, to be able to get birth control. It's never funded abortion, but the Trump administration cut that program for any organization that provides abortion, educates about abortion, or even talks about abortion. So Planned Parenthood was the number one provider of care for Title X funding, and they were cut out of the loop completely. And this money was going to these fake abortion clinics that have been set up by religious organizations for the sole purpose of talking people out of having abortions. So those are some of the things on a federal level we can look at with the Biden administration. But really, so much abortion policy comes out of states, right? And so where I feel super, super nervous is Trump put a bunch of crackpot judges in the lower courts and on the Supreme Court. There's still boatloads of crackpots who are holding office in legislatures, state legislatures and state senates. And they're the ones who are proposing draconian abortion laws that we fear are gonna go through a draconian court system and end up in a draconian Supreme Court to uphold things that aren't really real. So just to give you a taste of sort of what's been going on in 2021, 10 states since January have proposed total bans on abortion in their state, no exceptions for rape and incest, nothing. 4 states have proposed some kind of, I'm gonna call it a property clause, where the inseminator gets to weigh in on whether or not the person that they got pregnant could have an abortion, having them weigh in. And sometimes I think Arkansas, they had the term concerned party. So if you just feel like you're concerned, you can just weigh in on that. South Carolina.
So it seems like, with that, it seems like an extension of what they've been doing for the past decade or two, where they wanted parents to have the ability effectively to choose whether their kids are allowed access to these sorts of services.
Well, parents who allow their kids, there's a lot of minor laws all around where you have to, if you're a minor in many states seeking an abortion, you have to go before a judge and plead your case to be able to terminate your pregnancy. And it's sort of like if you're going before a judge to plead your case on whether or not you can have an abortion, I think you've made an assessment with yourself that you're not ready to be a parent. You know, like there's another flip side to that coin that's very real. And some states, they require both parents to weigh in on that. And if you don't have both parents, you're screwed, right?
Yeah.
And so there's just all these loopholes that are so profound. And then on this other larger scope of what America's really talking about, the one thing that Abortion Access Front does, you know, we go on the road and we help bring communities together with local abortion providers so that they can help advocate for laws and then just help really be like this sort of comfort space for clinics because they're under siege constantly. But another thing that we do is we, for the past 5 years, have been amassing an incredible database where we cross-reference all the anti-abortion extremism that's been happening in America. Because we travel around the country so much, we're able to find out where all these extremists are in all these states and then bring people together, right? And when the insurgent happened in January 6th in the Capitol, we identified 20 people from the anti-abortion movement who were at the Capitol and put them in touch with the FBI. And so we feel really proud of our work on just bringing those activist pieces together as well.
Yeah, and it might seem, I don't know, at first glance, sort of random that they would be connected, but it almost seems like the extreme anti-abortion activists have been like a little bit ahead of the curve on seemingly more and more of the Republican base, in that they've been okay with using violence as a tool of politics for a very long time. And that seems like now that's sort of getting mainstream. So I guess why wouldn't they have been involved in this?
Well, and a lot of people, you know, when they think of these people, they think that they're just sort of like weird churchy folk who just go to the clinic on Saturdays and that's their deal. And no, they're part of white nationalist organizations. They're part of, you know, we've identified people who are part of organizations like Operation Save America, which is a huge anti-abortion Christian extremist organization. And their leadership were in Kenosha, Wisconsin, defending Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, literally doing fundraisers for Kyle Rittenhouse and being part of the brigade that was protecting businesses. And so when you look at, there's a lot of those connections with the Oath Keepers and with the 3% and some of these extreme fringe white supremacist organizations have membership within these churches. And we have videotape of a lot of these churches having services and saying to their congresspeople, Christians need to rise up and take arms And we have to follow the laws of God, if the laws of man, government laws conflict with the laws of God, it's your duty to go against them. And that gives you permission to be as violent as you want, as long as you can interpret it and justify it as your God gave you permission. So it's pretty wild out there right now. And people feel very emboldened. And in all the states that had proposed those 100% bans, those 10 states I spoke of earlier, in all of my research, there was somebody saying, we really feel like how the courts are set up and how Trump set the courts up for us has given us a lot of power. And that feels really scary.
It does. It does. And I mean, there's been a lot of progress even today as we're filming this. Arkansas passed, the governor signed their basically total abortion ban. Yeah. It only would allow abortions in the case where it's to save the life or preserve the health of the fetus or mother. Yep. Rape or incest, there's no consideration for anything like that. And the thing is, these sorts of near total bans have failed. They've been taken down by legal challenges at some points in the last few years. But we also have a different Supreme Court than we did a couple of years ago. And so whether they intend for this one to remain as law for a few years, it could begin a chain reaction that leads to a challenge to Roe v. Wade at the Supreme Court. Were that to happen now with Amy Coney Barrett, how confident are you that Roe v. Wade would survive at all?
Well, I'm really interested in how these cases weave through the lower courts. Like, I'm gonna take you a step back and say, how are the makeup of the lower courts going to be? Because this is an egregious violation of Roe v. Wade, right? And you know, John Roberts really does care about his legacy. And so I'd be curious to see if John Roberts could make a difference or if some of these other people could be swayed. I don't have a lot of confidence, but the thing that's fascinating about this Arkansas case is the governor, Asa Hutchinson, who used to, you know, be on Capitol Hill, was very trepidatious about signing this bill because he said that he out loud said, this clearly violates all the tenets of Roe v. Wade and how the Supreme Court has set up what ensures a legal abortion in the United States. And he signed it anyway. And so for me, I want folks to really look at what your tax dollars are going to. Is COVID going great in your state? Are you guys all opened up and just ready for business and you're getting raises and your kids are in school and your life is just great? Because if it isn't, these people who claim to be pro-life, who are also saying don't wear a mask. I mean, I literally saw a woman at a protest holding a sign that said, I won't mask my unborn child. And I'm like, ma'am, you're wearing pants. You already are. So, you know, it's so wild to me, John, that as we are in the middle of a pandemic, as Fauci is saying, don't get ahead of yourselves. You know, we're plateauing and this could go bad. The states where people claim to be the most pro-life are the states that are really harming other people in a myriad of ways that go against the grain. And I don't know who hears it, you know? I mean, I know you and I hear it, but—
Well, yeah, and one of the reasons I'm so glad that you're on is we've been worried in the run up to inauguration that some people might think, hey, it's time to relax for a month or a year or 4 years. And hopefully this should be a reminder that whether federally in terms of making sure that enough gets done, but also on the state level, if these are issues that you care about, you can't take time off. Maybe you got a day or a long weekend off, but you can't stay at brunch for the next year. Mm-mm. It's just not gonna work.
No.
And actually, I wanted to ask you about, you're having an event, a virtual Dirty Dancing screening. Can you tell us about that and why you're doing that?
So part of how we sort of exist in the world as a nonprofit is we really want to be able to incorporate joy, activism, fun, and events so that you're not like picking one or the other. You're gonna have a good time and you're gonna learn something. So Dirty Dancing is America's like one of America's favorite movies. And it's also a movie whose theme is around a woman who gets pregnant and has to have an illegal abortion and somebody needs to fill in for her for the dance contest. Now that movie got pitched, that movie got made, and that movie is beloved. So we are doing sort of a Mystery Science Theater Riffathon fundraiser with Guy Branum and Helen Hong and Morgan Murphy and myself, where we'll be like watching the movie, you know, saying the lines and having a really fun time. And then afterwards, we're going to have a conversation with an incredible abortion provider who had an abortion, an illegal abortion, the year that movie was set in and made. And so she's going to talk about her experience and what she had to go wow. through to actually have an abortion. And she now provides care and in Michigan in three really gorgeous clinics. So she's going to give us this really cool perspective about the state of abortion now and, you know, sort of give us context to the film. So it's going to be like really fun, really great. And then also give you a little bit of context and also some calls to action and what you can do to help.
Awesome. That seems like a great combination there. And where can people find out more about the event?
Find out more about the event. If you want to go to our website, it's aafront.org/DD for Dirty Dancing and get your tickets early because we have this really great toolkit we're sending out with this uterus paper dolls, with costumes, with watermelon stuff, you know, all the iconic stuff that you can kind of awesome. Rock your horror picture show as you're watching with it.
That sounds awesome. Liz Winstead, as always, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.